Play.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. We appreciate it. Text line 251-343-0106. Joy Clark coming up in about 30 minutes from now from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs. And we'll talk with him kind of maybe a little bit about Alabama, but obviously there were elections in other places. If there's anything to be ascertained from that, we'll hear from Will in the 11 o'clock hour. But joining us now on the line, we talked to him all throughout the cycle. He is the publisher of the Coleman Daily, but Sam Roberts joins us on the line. Sam, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Well, we kind of knew the way this was going to go, but I guess the thing that maybe surprised a lot of people in your trade with the polling would be kind of the margins, and you know that these weren't particularly close races at all. And instinctively, if you looked at what happened on May 19th and you didn't look at the polls, this is probably where you would have been.
Yeah, you are correct. It was definitely a interesting night with a lot of bigger margins than most people expected. But, you know, other than on the Public Service Commission race with Jim Ziegler he is returning to where he started his career at back in the 70s as the youngest statewide official in the history of Alabama on the Public Service Commission on a really narrow victory. But outside of that race, it was kind of a lopsided night.
Yeah, and that race, I think Ziegler significantly underperformed, kind of based coming out of 19th, but also just the animosity about the Public Service Commission. Beeker almost pulled it out.
He did. Now, over a week and a half ago, we had Ziegler polling up in the mid-60s. His number, with the Beeker attacks, all the money that was being dumped into the Beeker campaign, every single day you could see him itching 2 to 3 points closer. I think if this election would have been on Thursday, I don't think Jim Ziegler could have survived. Beeker was inching closer every single day, and we knew it was going to be close. The last poll we had Ziegler at 50.5%, which is right where he ended up. I think he ended up a little over 51. So, you know, this race and the same polling that we had Ziegler at 50.5 on Monday night, that same polling had Ziegler in the 60s just a week ago. So voters were trending away from Ziegler to the Beeker campaign fast as money was being dumped into that campaign. But for Jim Ziegler, the election day came just in time to save the race and return Jim Ziegler to the Public Service Commission.
Yeah, so I'm eager to see how that's going to go. Let's talk about the other races, top of the ballot stuff here. And you know, we have some bad polling in this state, Sam, and you know, and I have talked about it all throughout, but I just don't think the methodology here. I think this is the first time in a while that we had a true Birmingham-centric candidate on the ballot as in a head-to-head, and you really tested this notion of Birmingham versus everybody else. And assuming that some of these pollsters, I think, were just kind of playing wish casting, but the ones I think that were really trying to do it right, they overpolled Birmingham. And I've always thought that. I've always thought that the Birmingham market, the way they do these surveys, they look at historical data and they oversample Birmingham. And that's what I think happened, at least with Jared and Barry.
Well, I agree with that, but also Jared Hudson's people were much more likely to respond to polling. That's something I found out over the past 17 days, where over the past 17 days, we have polled at least 80,000 different people all throughout Alabama each day, receiving a couple thousand responses every single night. One thing I've been doing is tracking, when we receive these responses, tracking what's happening over time as these people continue to respond with polling. One thing we found in the U.S. Senate race is that Jared Hudson's support supporters were 30% more likely to respond to polling. If we had 1,000 Barry supporters, 1,000 Jared supporters, and we sent out 2,000 polls to that group, we're going to have about 1,300 from Jared and 700 come back from Barry. His people were just much more likely to continue to respond for polling. One interesting thing we found when we took people who have responded to four or more of the polls we conducted, 75% of those people were Jared Hudson supporters. That is kind of where, even what I was showing you some, Jeff, where Jared and some of the raw data we were getting, Jared was ahead in this race in raw data. But when we started breaking the numbers down and seeing where it was coming from, that's when I decided to flip this race to Barry Moore at 52.5%. I missed it by a couple points, but Jared was showing strength in a lot of polling. But when you really looked into the data, you could see where it was coming from, and you could see that it was a safe night for Barry Moore. Another interesting note that I dove into over the past week was that a voter 75 and older, Barry Moore was at 68%. It was just too much to overcome for Jared Hudson.
Well, and here's the other thing about, we got to figure this out in this state about who responds to polls and who doesn't. But I'll say this about Jared Hudson, coming from where he came from, that this is the trend here is going to be more Jared Hudson. And that's what it's going to take. It may take 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But the way Jared Hudson ran this campaign, that's going to be the new way of doing things. This digital game, this digital strategy, you still got to do the ground game, but like direct mail and TV, broadcast TV, those things are kind of on the way out. And I think we're seeing this. I think because Jared Hudson, yes, he lost by a significant margin, but if you consider where he came from, where he started, and he took out Steve Marshall, not by a whole lot, but he took him out, a two-term statewide incumbent in a high office. And there's something to be said about that. But I think we had so many undecideds throughout this contest, and the Hudson strategy, while it didn't win today, it's going to win in the future.
Yeah, it is. And, running a campaign the way Jared Hudson ran this campaign, if you'd done this 8 years ago or 6 years ago, it would not have been successful at all. The digital game, Jared Hudson did an incredible job of that. But the thing is, the majority of voters in the state are still 65 and older. And, it's just harder to reach that group on digital platforms the way Jared Hudson primarily ran his campaign. But as time goes on, it's getting easier and easier. And I do expect, during the next decade to see a trend towards candidates like Jared Hudson in this race.
Yeah, and this may be already underway in other states. Like this model that they used, it may have won them a race in Connecticut or somewhere, but it doesn't work in Alabama. And these Alabama consultants, you need to, kind of take note of this. And I also think that, like, some of the Hail Mary passes, particularly with this race, but also Lieutenant Governor race, they didn't help the cause. But they had, I get it. They have internals. They probably saw that they were down despite what they were saying publicly. And they looked desperate. And then the more desperate things, that's just the hallmark of a losing campaign.
Yep, definitely. The last week, it was definitely some Hail Marys thrown, just nothing caught on enough. Now, I do think there was a point, and I think this point might have only been for a day, but I think there was a point in time where Barry got down to 52-53%. But I think, when he dipped to that margin, he went right back up to the mid to high 50s. I think just at the very beginning of the stories coming out over the past few weeks, Barry might have took just a small ding down. But, looking at the data and seeing what happened, I don't think Barry Moore was ever in danger of losing this race, aside from just a major mistake at the end. But none of that happened. Barry Moore was safe, looking at the data. I did think at times that Moore was in trouble. But he just, he's traditionally overperformed polling, and he done it once again. I saw what happened last night, I came to the conclusion this race was never in danger for Moore.
Well, the concern was this, and I've seen this happen before. Okay, they hit a pothole with the veterans issue, and you get to this fork in the road, which way you're going to go. And for a hot moment, they were, threatening lawsuits, and then they were running away from the press. And that's, to me, just it just started to feel very Roy Moore-esque. Like, you could see that that could potentially spiral, get out of control, and then you could have some problems there. But then I think the adults came in, no, we're not going to do it that way. This is the way we're going to do it. You're going to confront this head on. And once he confronted it head on, it went away.
Yeah, exactly. And if they would have just confronted it head on to start with, I think they probably would end this race at 57. The news stories about them threatening lawsuits to media outlets through the state hurt them more than the whole veteran story did, in my opinion. It's I don't know who was in charge of that, but I think they dropped the ball for Barry. And I think if this would have been a 51-49 race at that point, they could have lost the race for Barry. But, you know, thankfully for the Barry Moore campaign, they were safe. They were mid to high 50s at the time of this whole story coming out, or when, you know, the whole response to it from the team before they hit it head on. You know, they were safely in the mid to high 50s and didn't drop themselves into danger of losing this race. But if it would have just been a little bit tighter, if Hudson would have been a little bit stronger in North Alabama, Calvert County, Lauderdale County, Madison, Limestone, those areas, this could have been a different race. And I still don't understand why the Jared Hudson campaign did not focus more in the northern part of the state. That still baffles me. He ran a great campaign and, I mean, came from nothing to what he did as an incredible race. But if I was with a Jared Hudson campaign, I would have spent a whole lot more time in the areas of the Tennessee Valley than what I spent in this race.
Yeah, and that's sort of my take on it too, and I say this kind of knowing this, Jerry Carl tried this. He tried to go into NWB territory, and he tried to win over votes against Barry Moore 2 years ago in 24. It just didn't work. Barry Moore was winning boxes in Dale and Henry County like 80-20. Their mind was made up. You weren't going to flip enough votes over there. It wasn't worth the trip. And I agree, because he spent time down here. He spent a lot of time over there. I don't know why, but I'm with you on this. I think like he way underperformed what he needed to, especially in the Shoals, but also in Madison County to win this race.
Yeah, he seems like in the runoff, you know, that he just – and it felt like, from what I was seeing online on social media from the campaign, they were just entirely too much time south of Montgomery. The voters, like you said, in Barry Moore's area, Mobile, Baldwin counties, they were going to vote for Barry, and there was no change in their mind. That's who they were going to support. You know, he's represented a lot of that area in Congress and has done a great job. So they were just going to vote for Barry Moore. Jared Hudson's territory was Birmingham or Jefferson County, Coleman County. But he needed to turn Morgan County and Limestone County and Lauderdale County and Calvert County. He needed to turn those areas into Jared Hudson territory. He didn't have to win them 60-40, but he had to win them. You can't go up to Lauderdale and get beat 60-40. Jared Hudson is from Gardendale. A candidate from the Wiregrass just should not be able to beat you 60-40 in the Tennessee Valley and a lot of areas. And Barry Moore did, and credit to him. That's something that previous campaigns like Bradley Byrne has never been able to accomplish in North Alabama from the southern part of the state, and Barry Moore found a way to do it. I do feel like Jared Hudson dropped the ball in that area.
And then one more, let's talk about the lieutenant governor's race real quick. And, you know, Wes Allen, I said this, he's been running. We had him on yesterday. He first announced in February of 2025, there was just the ceiling that he could never get past. He could never break. It was like 35 for a while. He got to 43 in the runoff. Well, that was his high water mark. And you know, but Wes Allen, it's this, and I'm going to tell you that once that Trump endorsement came for John Wall, there was no turning back. And you know, you know, that's where that campaign was lost, that whoever was running the show there should have been more proactive at either trying to stop the Trump endorsement are trying to win it or whatever, but there was sort of an arrogance about it. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. We're kind of focused on here, and I think that's what made the difference.
Trump definitely had a successful endorsement cycle here with the primary elections with Barry Moore and John Wall. I think John Wall did a really good job with a Trump endorsement. He let voters know he is the Trump endorsed candidate. Everybody knew that issue, but John Wall also did a great job of campaigning about John Wall. Wes Allen, you know, like you said, I mean, he kind of capped out in the mid-40s. But I will say, I mean, you know, 6 weeks ago, we were seeing polling with Wes Allen in the 40s and John Wall in the low 20s before a few weeks out from the primary election. And it's like, is there enough time for John Wall to come back? A lot of the question in some people's minds was, is Wes Allen going to win this race without a runoff? And I really think that John Wall shocked the entire Wes Allen campaign on May 19th when he came out just a tad ahead of Wes Allen, and he carried that momentum over into the runoff. When it was time for the runoff election, John Wall was up in TV markets all throughout Alabama. The next day, Wes Allen didn't go up for another week. John Wall hit the ground running in the runoff election. He kept his eye on what was happening every moment, and he just ran a great campaign all the way through June 16th. You know, there was a few times where the race was tightening up a little bit. John kind of started off with a 6 or 7 point lead after the primary election. You know, there was a few times where Wes tightened it up just a tad, but he just never was able to overtake it. And the last week, it's just kind of seemed like the Allen campaign was unraveling with personal attacks against John Wall. And I kind of feel like that's where this race turned from 52-48 to what happened last night.
Yeah, and you know, when we deployed the talking raccoon, you knew that there were problems. It was just...
Yeah. If you're resorting to a talking raccoon in a race, and then your campaign is in trouble. I learned that this cycle.
Sam, we got to get out of here. Folks will find you online. How can they do so?
They can do so at Coleman Daily. You can find us on any social media platform.
Coleman Daily. I'll check that out. Sam, we appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh so right. My Dixieland line.
More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure. It off more than I could chew, but do it all.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Wednesday morning. Do you have time to go back over the winners and losers around the state? Thank you. Well, we could do that real quick here before we get to the break here. John Wall defeated Wes Allen by 57-43. 14-point margin there, about 43,000 votes. Catherine Robertson defeating Jay Mitchell by a margin of 55-45. It's about 10 points there, 31,000 votes. Obviously, top of the ballot, Barry Moore defeated Jared Hudson by 11 points, about 35,000 votes, 36,000 votes difference there. In that race, those were the kind of the marquee ones. Down ballot, Corey Hill defeated Christina McInnes by 6 points. Jim Ziegler ekes out a win in a 2-point win in the Public Service Commission race for that runoff. And then up in North Alabama, there was a State Board of Education seat. Emily Jones, the first Moms for Liberty chapter in the state, defeated William Matthews by 8 points. So those are the big ones. Frances Holt Jones holds on to her seat. She gets a 4-point win over Joe Friedman down in South Baldwin County. There were some others. Tracy Estes's seat, one he currently occupies. You got a Republican nominees there, and then one in East Alabama. Seagraves and Monroe will be the Republican nominees in those races. And then, like I said, Hulk Jones and District 95. Democrat, if you care, Andrew Snead, kind of a throwback, more of a tamer version of Parker Griffith is the way Dale Jackson describes him. Be the Democrat nominee in the 5th Congressional District. He'll run against Dale Strong. And that's the one to watch. Not that I think Dale Strong's in trouble. But that's a changing area in Huntsville. It's still going to be dictated probably to politics by the Shoals and Jackson County and you know, the Republicans there. But see how close that is up in AL5. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. We'll get to your text throughout the rest of today's show. Will Hampson coming up in about an hour. Tuesday regular, we push you back a day. We just had to get all the candidates on yesterday. One last round. So Will was gracious enough to cede his time. And we'll do a makeup appearance today here in about an hour or so. Joining us now on the line, he's from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. News and Views, Joey Clark joins us. Joey, how are you?
Great. How you doing?
Doing well. You ready? Are you glad this is over?
Yes. I'm so glad it's over, especially with the Senate race, man. That at the end, I was pulling my hair out.
Yeah, and you know, people took things personally in ways they shouldn't, and I guess it's just like high drama and anxiety, and I these campaigns can be tough on people, but like we do this every 2 years, there's just some kind of like over emotional reaction to whatever is going on, and you know, like the thing was like you and I were talking about it, and we said it a week from now, are we going to be talking about Barry Moore's veteran status or you know, I guess we got a talking raccoon in the interim, but there's just a lot of desperation there. And I think we fall for it every time, but it is what makes the world goes around.
Well, and it's people trying to win. And I think it's unfortunate that's sometimes the reality. And at the end of the day, I have to say, you know, I've done a few of these cycles now. I like Jared Hudson a lot. And when you look at Jared Hudson's background, he's a very impressive guy. Like in many ways, I'm like humbled by all the stuff that guy's done. But at the end of that, you know, when you do get a little desperate and you're trying those Hail Marys. Now, I don't know. I was wondering when I saw the raccoon ad, I was worried I was having a stroke. Like, I still don't understand what happened with Wes Allen there, because I think Wes is a solid dude. But yeah, no, it's good that it's like in the rearview mirror. And in fact, the Trump-backed candidates won. And it looks like everybody who won in the primary, right, ended up winning the runoff.
Well, yeah. And let me say, listen, you've talked about this at length. Jared Hudson may have lost yesterday, but and then I know he's probably not sitting there thinking about, you know, these symbolic victories or whatever. But the way that he ran his campaign is the way that campaigns are going to have to be done probably in the future. That, you know, the internet is going to be the battleground. Now, it's not yet. That's not where you win and lose elections in Alabama. But there was a strong enough show there. It was good enough to beat Steve Marshall. You still got to do the pounding the pavement and the shoe leather and all of that. But I'm telling you, the digital game is getting more and more prominent each of these cycles as they pass.
Oh, yeah, and if you remove the Trump backing and Barry Moore is a known quantity, then I think Jared, they might have edged out anybody. Like if this was kind of just straight up, no big president endorsement, that campaign might have been the best, most nimble campaign. And Jared only got better as he went on, I noticed, after interview. Well, I shared with Dale Jackson's frustration that Friday before the election. I interviewed him that same day, too, and that was frustrating. But generally, I thought Jared did a great job.
Well, and, you know, that was just – I think that was different. That was a desperate, hey, we're down 15, guys. We got to do something here. And they made up about 4 points, but that wasn't going to do it. And I thought for – it was that Saturday. It was not this last Saturday, but the Saturday before last. And I took my 5-year-old to the Blue Wahoos, like play in the park day. And I'm sitting up there in the stands and I'm actually like looking at this and there was a chance there, I thought, with the veterans discussion. Mm-hmm. It could have spiraled out of control for Barry Moore. The way they were handling it, threatening lawsuits, they were running away from the press, they weren't taking questions, they were trying to dodge, they were just mishandling it. And like for a moment you look at it and you think, well, this is gonna wind up in kind of a Roy Moore-esque situation. If y'all, you remember the Roy Moore cycle.
Oh, yeah.
The story drops in the Washington Post. And that afternoon, Roy Moore goes on Sean Hannity's national radio show and just dodges all the questions. And it did not sound, you know, because there was sort of this like, hey, we're not even going to give this the attention it deserves. I mean, it's a nothing burger. There's nothing to see here. There's nothing to talk about. We're not going to answer questions about it, but you don't get to do that. And that's the way they were going until some adults came in, from the NRSC and, you know, Trump world. No, we're not. You stand down. Let us handle this. And they confronted it head on. And I thought gave a plausible explanation of the veteran, you know, timeline and all of that. It may not have put the fire completely out, but it put the fire out enough to where it did not matter yesterday.
Yeah, and I think for folks like you and I, we'll remember this. Like, I remember a lot of these cycles and the games and the little tricks that were played. But at the end of the day, Barry's a veteran. I think he's going to be the next senator. It's pretty safe to assume he'll win the general. And I guess he'll have his lane.
He'll have his lane, and you know, he'll probably be senator for as long as he wants to be. It's just how it is,
right?
In Alabama, there'll be somebody try to challenge him, but you know, this is also kind of just the temperament of Alabama. Katie Britt, Perry Moore, it's Jeff Sessions, Richard Shelby. You get it, right?
Yeah, no, and I love it. I think actually that represents the state quite well. We have a streak that both represent very well. The state has both dynamics going on, and I think they'll end up being a good team actually down the road.
Yeah, you need the ideological bulwark. You need the guy who is talking about the social values, the cultural values, the things that are kind of conservative politics in America in 2026. And then you need somebody you've always had historically in this state, be it in Congress or be it in the United States Senate, the Shelby type, the John Sparkman type, you know, Hal Heflin or whatever it may be, that's like keenly focused on playing the Washington game and using the Washington game to benefit the state.
Well, and I could probably see Senator Britt right now if she was hearing this conversation. So I'll give her credit. I think she's more conservative than Shelby and Heflin, but come on. That is the dynamic here.
Yeah, and I think she is. She does really well in trying to. She doesn't leave it all on the table the way Shelby did. Well, that, you know, that abortion stuff. Let Jeff Sessions and all that immigration stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'm with him on it, but it's not going to be my priority. My priority is getting money for the port or whatever it is.
Right.
That's my goal. That's my game. On this rest of this, yes, I will pay lip service to it. I'll even vote like I'm supposed to, but that is not going to be where I'm going to put my focus.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting to see the dynamic, but Alabama's in a great position with 2 more years of Trump. And correct me if I'm wrong, maybe we can talk about this later today, but it seems like 2028's already begun with J.D. Vance's press tour. So it'll be interesting to see if you get that continuation. You have these good relationships that both senators we have right now. I think Alabama's sitting in a good position there.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, like I said, this is sort of where the boot of the electorate was. We had this battle between Mo Brooks and Katie Britt 4 years ago, and the state went in that direction, you know, and then Katie Britt's going to be on the ballot again in 2 years, but she's not going to have a serious competitor. And this is just how this sort of works. Tommy Tuberville's an anomaly. Jeremiah Denton was an anomaly. You know, that these guys who come for one term, that's not typical of Alabama.
It's not. And I think you're right. Unless it's something crazy with a bunch of money and personality for days tries to challenge Britt, I think she runs away with that easily.
And yeah. And then there's just, I name somebody, because there's a person would be at the like Nick Saban stature, and he's not going to run.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think Saban could win.
Beyond that, we talk about Alabama type celebrities, statewide appeal. There's just not that many of them outside of college football.
Right. And I think Miss Terry would end him before he ever got off the ground. I don't think Saban's ever going
to
run.
Yeah. So Barry Moore is poised to be the next United States Senator for this state. And it's a continuation of Tommy Tuberville. I say the one difference probably between the two, Tuberville and Barry Moore, that Barry Moore just won't be out in front of the cameras as much. I mean, he'll do it. Yeah. He'll go on, but he's not going to, some of it's hyperbole with Coach, but that he's just not going to be that straight of a shooter. He's not going to say things that are going to like make the MSNBC crowd clutch their pearls.
No, I think Barry's going to be really, really, really solid. I think he's going to be like, I almost see him standing next to Mike Lee a lot. I'll put it that way. And having a lot of, that type of guy. He's not going to be over the top like a Cruz or even a Rand Paul. I think he's just going to be really solid. Well, think of his track record. Freedom Caucus is why I like them in this race. I just have liked what he's done since he's gone up there. But you're right. He's not going to do it in a way where he's like running for president or anything.
And aside from being from Enterprise High School, I mean, that's it, That's what people were kind of worried about. And there's a geographic tribalism in Alabama. There's no question. But I think in this case, the ideology sort of trumps that. And that makes them very dynamic in that regard.
It is interesting that both senators are from the same, say, smaller town in the state. That's an interesting development.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk for years about how just these hallmarks of a desperate campaign showed up with talking raccoons and questions about military service. But the thing we got to talk about, and we're going to do more with it at 1819 News, 1819news.com, is the polling was abysmal. These pollsters don't know how to poll this state. A serious poll that wasn't a campaign poll had Jared Hudson up 7 or something in the late stages here, and that just wasn't reality.
Yeah, and they're going to have to try because I don't think people are answering landlines, certainly, like they were anymore. And also, honestly, the text solicitations and all that just really annoys me. I usually block all that stuff once it comes in. So it's going to be tough, and I think also there's a cultural thing here in this state. Especially at this point where people don't want to answer the polls. Even if you get in touch with them, they kind of are cagey about it.
Well, the ones who do answer, though, are a different voter. And the other thing is that the type of person who responds to these surveys, but I've always thought this, and I think this is a true test of it, that these pollsters overpoll Birmingham. They always do. They don't poll. I mean, and maybe it's media market, and you look at the media market, you're like, well, Mobile is half of it's in Florida. Montgomery, Dothan, and Huntsville just aren't as big. They overpull Birmingham. And then the reason I say this, we had a first time in a while, yet a true Birmingham candidate. Right. That his strong part of the state was going to be Jefferson County and the surrounding counties. He was going to do well in that Birmingham, very centric, Birmingham focused group. And the polling, I think, looks at the Birmingham DMA, and they always pull it like almost in some polls I've seen over the years, like 2-1 to everything else. And it's a big market. It goes from Cherokee County all the way to Choctaw County in some parts of it. But you know what? It's not indicative of the entirety of the state.
Yeah, and also I wonder how many of these, do you think it was just bad methodology? They don't have a good order of science to it? Or is there also a little bit of the polls condition, the polls sort of gamesmanship here, like convince people that the cats jump in a certain way and
yes,
I'll jump that way.
Obviously, I think that's the case. But we had too many campaign polls, internal polls, really steering this. But I think it's methodology. So, and I talk about this all the time. you have to have a real grasp of what's going on in Alabama to know what turnout is going to be. For example, if there's a solar farm or a data center or a poultry processing plant or some local issue that people are just fired up about, they don't want it, whatever the issue is, you're going to have higher voter turnout. But they don't reflect that in these surveys. They don't look for these samples and say, well, there's something really big happening here in public affairs. They're probably going to have a little bit higher turnout, and that's going to sway this election. They're just looking at, like, well, this happened in 24, this happened in 22, this happened in 20, this happened in 18, et cetera. So we think an average of all of these put together, this is where we're going to say that this sample is where we're going to weight this, and this response is going to be weighted this way. And you cannot do that. It's just not the behavior in the state. I mean, the voting behavior is erratic. And to know who's going to come out to vote that day, you've got to understand there's a runoff in this part of the state. There's something else going on here. You've got to be on top of it.
Well, and also I think some of this was wishful thinking. People being paid to be creative in the sense that without even looking at a poll, you go, oh, the people that won the plurality in the primary, the two people that got the Trump endorsement, and then Catherine Robertson, who I think was just much more available on the stump and on the campaign trail media-wise. Like, it just, I mean, you start looking at these basic things, it's like, yep, those are the winners. There you go.
Yeah, but the runoff to me, it was such a departure from what happened on May 19th in the polls. But then the runoff, I mean, the primary, that is, and then the runoff just reflected what happened in the primary.
Yeah.
And we acted like, well, that, you know, everything's out the window and we're starting from scratch. It's a blank slate. No, you gotta look at what happened in the primary and apply that to your science. And a lot of these guys just refuse to do that.
Yeah. And it's, again, I think there are good people that are getting paid to do this stuff and they're trying, but you're right. They got to up their game. And it would be nice to have like a solid, almost independent polling firm that everybody in the state, especially media, could turn to. But, you know, I guess there are a few that are more out of state that poll national stuff. But nothing's coming to my mind, actually, where I would really just lean on an outside group.
We used to have, like, the University of South Alabama Press Register poll, and you used to have, like, political scientist at the, you know, the local professor, and he would staff it with college students. And the game's changed. You got to find that right mix of online with the other and combine the two, but no one's really perfected the science yet.
No, and plus, boomers still dominate Alabama, baby. Like, as you talked about with the Fox Newsification of stuff, like, boomers are the ones that vote in the rain on a runoff day.
Yeah, and, you know, that's just the reality. And maybe people will learn their lesson here. I don't know. As long as there's a buck to be grabbed and you have to create a scenario where your guy can win, then there's going to be these games played with these polls. Joey, folks will find you online. How could they do so?
At the Joey Clark on X or Joey Clark Live on YouTube.
Joey, we appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poehler Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'm going back to Alabama. As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, Mister, many thanks. He said, you don't have to call me Mister, Mister. The whole world called me Hank. He said, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid?
Look and laugh at you in Jackson, and I'll be dancing on a pony keg. They'll lead you around town like the scalded hound with your tail tucked between your legs. Yeah, go to Jackson, you big talking man, and I'll be waiting.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poehler Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106, hit us up on that text line, and we will respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Will Hampson coming up in about 45 minutes from P2 Public Affairs. We'll talk national politics with him. We have our first tropical storm of the season, Arthur, the first named storm, I guess. It's a technical way to describe it. But kind of looking at it, we're going to get some of it, but it looks like it's going to hit a little north of us once it makes landfall, probably, Texas, and then ease its way to the east. But obviously got our eyes on that. Text line 251-343-0106. Let's see here. Ultra Runner writes, Jared went with a toxic female attack utilizing indirect innuendo for reputational harm, not the mano a mano directness of a seal. I like the guy, but this about face felt inauthentic. Did it backfire? Did it harm his brand for future elections? Probably not. And I'm going to say this about Jared Hudson, and I don't mean it in a negative way at all. Jared Hudson's just not good at the attack. Jared Hudson is good at talking about Jared Hudson. Jared Hudson believes in Jared Hudson. And Jared Hudson thrives when he talks about Jared Hudson. That is the reality. He is not a candidate who is good on offense in that way. Jared Hudson excels by showcasing his own resume, his own qualities, and not trying to attack the qualities of another candidate. And that's, there's something to that, Ultra Runner. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.